Having had their systems thoroughly voided, they were too hungry. After parts of the calf bull were seared only, in drunken he-man competition, mostly the members of the tribe ate the bull in bleeding handfuls, raw. The cabin had four rooms, two in front, one, the smaller, used as the office in which Jack worked, the other with a fieldstone fireplace as a living dining room kitchen. Kriegel slept in one small room at the back of the cabin. Jack had thought Wolf was asleep in the other. In the half-loft over the back of the house, Tracy slept. Despite the occasional yell, Jack thought nearly everyone else in the encampment was asleep, passed out, knocked unconscious, dead. Using floppy disks he had bought at the mall, first Jack had copied every file from that computer. Membership lists, names, addresses, ages, occupations, brief biographies, as well as the names and addresses of the subscribers to the monthly magazine The Tribe, names and addresses of contributors, locations, numbers and balances of bank accounts belonging to the tribe under names various and usually suggesting a charitable or religious nature. One account in a Birmingham bank was in the name of Karsten Wolf. It had a balance of $53,285.12. Again, using Tracy's code book and using the modem, Jack then found himself in a huge computer network. He scanned the billboard. The messages headed "Attention all HQs" for the previous 48 hours. The big news was that the Reverend Dr. Commandant Chris Kriegel had escaped the federal prison in Kentucky and would soon be among them. Commandant Kriegel would take his rightful place of leadership in the international tribal movement. Kriegel was described as a founder and organizer of the international tribe, an important religious leader, historian, anthropologist, philosopher, professor, author, and activist, a leading international advocate of white rights. It also repeated that he was wanted for questioning by the South African government and most police agencies in Europe. Nothing indicated that Kriegel had arrived safely at the camp in Tolliver, Alabama. There were several statements that Kriegel's freedom, life, and safety must be protected at all costs by every member of the tribe, even at the supreme sacrifice of that member's own life for the good of all. In the billboard, there were scores of messages to Kriegel, apparently from HQs in many parts of the country and the world, congratulating him on his escape from prison. Most such messages were accompanied by personal statements from people expressing eagerness to work with him in bringing a new energy, sense of purpose, dedication, discipline, and organization to the international tribal movement. One apparently humorously intended message suggested Kriegel never again delay himself and the movement by ever again stopping to strangle a black whore personally. Also in the billboard file were rantings, many not really comprehensible, concerning historic, universal, and immediate local injustices committed by various non-white groups and individuals. The alphabet of derogatory names used for these groups and individuals in the billboard would make its own glossary. Jack found the membership lists, etc., of groups around the country and the world all easily accessible from the little computer at Camp Orania in Tolliver, Alabama. Also, he found a list labeled "Those Targeted for Assassination." To his great surprise, he even found particulars regarding Germany's Autonomen, the hooded, masked force that protects white rights demonstrators from German security forces. Clearly, the tribe was proud of its ability to document perfectly. Also clearly, Jack thought, probably because the members of the tribe believed in the righteousness of their cause and in the purity of their own hearts, their security systems were as naive as might be the Sisters of Charities. All this information Jack was copying onto floppy disks when he heard a man's heavy tread approach the little office. When Commandant Wolf entered the small office, Jack was typing onto the computer screen, and Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. Numbers, chapter 12, verse 1. Caressing Jack's neck in a low voice, Wolf asked, "You haven't filled even one condom yet?"
"No, sir."
"Why not?" At the console, Jack sweated profusely. His floppy disks were plainly visible next to the computer. He hoped Wolf was sufficiently computer ignorant not to suspect what he was doing.
"Haven't had time yet, sir."
"A beautiful Aryan boy like you has no interest in sex?"
"I have interest in sex, sir."
"What are you working on?" Wolf continued to massage Jack's neck.
"I'm typing notes for Dr. Kriegel's sermon in the morning, sir."
Jack thumbed the edges of the floppy disks. and putting into the computer some of his writings, you know, his sermons, speeches, some of the things he wrote while in prison. Very important I get them into the computer.
Kriegel had use of a computer in prison?
Of course, Jack answered. He worked in the library. You know about the computer billboard he established among the prisons?
Yes.
That was how he organized the prisoners around the country. No one could stop him. His newsletters that were mailed from Washington, Berlin, Warsaw, back to the prisoners.
Yes, yes. Our friend Chris Kriegel is a genius at organization. A spellbinder, too. What's this?
Wolf leaned over Jack's head. From the computer screen he read,
"Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their tribe."
With Wolf's hands on his neck, Jack closed his eyes. He took a deep breath.
"Excellent," Wolf clapped him on the shoulder. "Simple, familiar statements. Exactly what is needed. Give them the familiar in a new context and people will believe and do whatever you want. Isn't that what preachers have been doing for centuries?"
Jack sighed.
"If you say so, sir."
"And what's this? And Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman."
"Moses married a nigger?"
"So it was reported, sir. Moses married interracially."
"Ah, yes, of course."
Wolf cleared his throat.
"Moses was a Jew, wasn't he?"
"Such is commonly believed."
Jack typed, "There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus." Galatians 3:28.
"Ah, yes."
Looking up, Jack saw Wolf frown as he read.
"I'm sure Brother Kriegel knows what he's doing."
"Oh, yes, sir."
Wolf squeezed Jack's shoulders. "Still, it is so late in the night." Wolf ran his hand up Jack's arm.
"You are so sweaty. Such a sweaty boy. Don't you think it is time you filled at least one condom?"
"Sir?"
"Perhaps you need to be stimulated. You need to be stimulated a little?
Sexually stimulated?"
"Yes."
"By you, sir?"
Abruptly, Jack stood up. In the desk's lamplight, he faced Wolf from a meter away. Wolf was shirtless, but otherwise dressed. He wore his uniform-like trousers, his boots, his holstered six-shooter. Jack said,
"Sir, the regulations of the tribe prohibit the use of liquor and or other drugs."
Mildly, Wolf said, "Certainly." With a straight arm, Jack pointed through the cabin's windows.
"Sir, there was wide and general use of liquor and other drugs in this camp tonight."
"Of course," Wolf said. "So? The boys have to blow off a little steam." "More to the point," he smiled at Jack, "we must attract them. How can we be responsible for the habits they bring with them? Someday we will have tighter control."
"Sir,"
Jack could feel his torso pouring with sweat. He guessed the dose of salt he had had at breakfast that morning had held the sweat in his body until this unfortunate moment.
"The regulations of the tribe abhor any homosexual activity."
"Homosexual?"
Wolf's scalp, his hairline, appeared to move backward on his head. His right hand raised slightly toward the grip of his revolver.
"Anything that smacks of homosexuality, sir."
"God damn you! You think that I just suggested..."
Wolf breathed hard.
"Homosexual?"
"You suggested stimulating me sexually, sir."
"That is not homosexual. You've been in prison, with nothing but men."
Staring at Jack, Wolf lifted his revolver from his holster.
"Are you accusing me of homosexuality? I will shoot you for saying such a thing." "You think I will have you saying such a thing about me? I will say I came into the office and found you stealing files from the computer."
Jack looked at the disks he had already filled on the desk.
"That would be true."
Wolf raised the revolver. He aimed it at Jack.
"You fought with me. I had to shoot you."
In a bored, indifferent voice, Jack said,
"Shoot me."
He waved a dismissive hand at Wolf. Jack sat on the edge of the cot along the inside wall of the office. He picked up the guitar. He picked a few notes, strummed a few chords. Still aiming his revolver at Jack's head, Wolf said incredulously,
"You son of a bitch, you think you can charm me or something?"
Jack nodded to him.
Yes. Jack played and sang for Commandant Wolf the Kander Ebb song, Tomorrow the World Belongs to Me, from the musical Cabaret. Listening, Commandant Wolf slowly lowered the revolver. In the lamplight, his eyes glistened.
God damn you, Wolf said.
Before he left the office, Wolf said to Jack,
If you mention one word of this to anyone ever, I will shoot you. I will kneecap you. I will shoot your balls off.
Jack played the Commandant to bed. Then he returned to pulling files from the computer. Hi. Just before dawn, Tracy stuck his head around the jamb of the office door. Morning, Jack said. He'd the computer and every system attached to it he could find via Tracy's codebook. Labeled in his smallest handwriting in his own code, he had put the floppy disks back into their boxes, back into their plastic bags, doing his best to make them look new and unused. He had been looking forward to a few moments' sleep. What are you doing? Tracy asked. Jack said, wondering about coffee. You just get up? Tracy looked at the cot at the side of the office. I'm up. I'll get coffee. Black? Sugar. While Jack stirred around the office, making the cot look more slept in, reinserting the charged battery in the camcorder, he wondered if Tracy was documenting on his ever-in-hand clipboard that at that moment in history he was taking 2 teaspoons of instant coffee, 1 teaspoon of sugar, and 2 pints of water from the cabin's kitchen. Jack was grateful for Tracy's sense of order. He admired the way Tracy had established the camp's computer, so very orderly, so very comprehensible, so very penetrable. Everything in it had been wonderfully easy to steal. Here. Dressed only in underpants, Tracy handed Jack his coffee. 1 sugar. Then Tracy sat on the cot, knees drawn up, back against the wall. He was a slim teenager with dark hair, dark eyes. Tracy what? Jack asked. What's your last name?
Wolf.
Son of Karsten Wolf?
Yes.
Although he was tired of it, Jack swiveled the desk chair around to face Tracy and sat in it. Is Wolf your real family name?
Of course not. My father had it legally changed, for obvious reasons.
What was your name originally?
None of your business, Fayoni.
Jack sipped from his mug. Thanks for the coffee.
You've been in prison?
Yes, Jack said.
How are things going?
You mean for the movement?
Very well. In the last 5 years, Kriegel has organized chapters of the tribe in every federal and major state prison in the country. Almost half the white men, at least those who have any hope of ever getting out, belong. Of course, many of them belong just to be safe while they're in prison.
Tracy stuck out his chin.
Who started it?
Who started what?
Didn't the blacks in the prisons start organizing along racial lines first?
Yeah, Jack said, for protection.
Protection against what? Aren't the majority of prisoners in this country black?
No, Jack said.
It seems like it.
It's a deep question. Anyway, Kriegel has developed a considerable force.
Yeah.
Bright-eyed, Tracy smiled in appreciation.
It won't be long.
There are plans?
There sure are.
Like what?
Not for me to say. Kriegel has been briefed by my father. There'll be a formal meeting later today. I don't know whether you'll be allowed to attend.
Of course I will.
Not up to me.
You think Kriegel committed that crime, got himself sent to prison on purpose, Jack? You know, to organize the prisoners?
God, said Jack.
It could be. He's awesome.
I'll say.
My father has developed an awesome training program here.
You enjoy it?
Yeah, I've become expert at rifle and semi-automatic weapons. I qualify as sniper. I've done hand grenades. I'm learning mortars now. We drill pretty hard most days.
What fun.
Sabotage is what really interests me. Our sabotage corps is really growing. My father says that's where our real strength is, in sabotage.
What did your father do before he became Commandant Wolf?
Sold insurance.
Ever in the military?
Army Supply Corps.
I see.
He's a really great salesman. He could sell snowballs to Eskimos. You heard his speech last night?
Yeah.
Where's your mother?
She left us. Couldn't stand the discipline. I mean, my father needs things exactly right. He's so important and all. Has so much responsibility organizing all this. She couldn't understand that some beatings are necessary so people won't make the same mistake twice, you know what I mean? I mean, all this is a big responsibility. My father is a great man. Where are you from, originally?
Illinois, the land of Lincoln. I hate that. Freed the mud people.
You were brought up this way from birth?
What way?
Oh, believing in white rights?
Sure. My father's grandfather was stabbed by a nigger.
Your great-grandfather was stabbed by a black person?
Why do you say it that way?
If he was stabbed by a white person, would you and your father be against white people?
I don't much like the way you're talking. Something seems wrong to me about the way you're talking.
Do you ever get away from here?
The camp?
Sure. I went to the wave pool in Decatur once.
Have fun?
Not really.
Why not?
My father wouldn't let me wear my uniform. There were niggers there, I mean in the water, with the white folks. There were niggers everywhere I looked. I suspect some of them had knives.
Pretty scary, huh?
I wasn't too scared, just uncomfortable. They hate us.
Who does?
The niggers, they have to.
Why?
Hey, Jack, why are you talking this way? You're Kriegel's lieutenant, his aide.
So?
Some of the words you use sound to me goddamned liberal.
Jack smiled.
I'm just questioning your motives, Tracy. What's with this personal motivation? Sounds emotional to me.
Are you emotional? That's soft.
Cut it out.
Tracy put his feet on the floor.
Jack said, It just seems to me you can't be a pure believer, Tracy, if you have a personal emotional motivation. Haven't you read Kriegel's pamphlets? He says people with personal emotions can't be trusted that much.
Gee, I don't know about you.
Tracy went to the door. Looking around at Jack, his facial expression was similar to his father's, standing at the same door a few hours earlier.
Tracy said, My father is a great man, and he says I'm following in his footsteps. I'm doing everything he asks. What we're doing is important. It's necessary. Don't you doubt me, Fayoni. When the shooting starts, we'll see just how you act. I bet you turn into goose flesh.
I don't know, Tracy.
Still in his little desk chair, Jack shook his head.
I think you'd better rethink where you are, what you're doing. To me, you sound like a real soft guy.
Tracy slammed the door behind him. Jack chuckled. Through the office window, the dawn was gray. He turned off the desk light.
Another day, Jack yawned. More confusion sown.
Chapter 19. Blithe Spirit, good morning.
Good morning, this is Jack Fayoni. May I speak with my mother, please, Ms. Crystal Fayoni?
Ms. Fayoni is in concentration. Do you know the appropriate code, Mr. Fayoni?
Health, Jack said.
Health had been the appropriate code in all the years his mother had been visiting Blithe Spirit twice a year. It had never changed. From this observation, Jack assumed Blithe Spirit did not have the high rate of recidivism as did his mother.
One moment, please.
Jack had returned to the little office in the log cabin headquarters of Camp Orania. Since shortly after dawn, he had patrolled the camp with the camcorder, videotaping everything, from the main road in, the long winding timber road, the odd supposedly concealed pillboxes along at either side, the trailers, carport bunkhouses, porta-potties, the central log cabin, the flagpole, the flag, the hills surrounding the camp, the target ranges, the ancient locked Quonset hut he assumed was for weapons and ammunition storage. And he had videotaped the cook hanging by his neck from the branch of a tree. Upon his return to the log cabin headquarters, Jack had interrupted the breakfasts of Commandants Kriegel and Wolf and Lieutenant Tracy by telling them of the hanging cook. Tracy had made their breakfasts. Kriegel slapped the breakfast table and laughed.
So, it wasn't my speech that made everybody sick. For a moment there, I thought perhaps I had lost my touch. The boys knew it was the chili, so they hung the cook.
Damn, Wolf said.
It's damned hard to keep a decent cook. That one wasn't bad. He could make great pots of food out of anything we gave him.
Better they hang the cook than the speaker, Kriegel laughed. That's what I say. The boys know man does not live by bread alone.
Sorry to interrupt your breakfasts, Jack said. There's another dead guy out there, too, in the woods behind the women's trailers.
Have some eggs, Jack, Kriegel said. You're looking tired. Didn't you sleep well?
I slept wonderfully. Nothing like a good purge for the system. You young are supposed to recuperate from a difficult time faster than we older people. Let me pour you some coffee.
The four men finished their breakfasts. Wolf and his son discussed where on the place they would bury the cook and whoever the other corpse was. Tracy was assigned to draft someone else's cook and put him to work preparing breakfast for the men as quickly as possible.
Wolf would organize the burial. Kriegel said,
"We'll postpone the church service, our Bible reading and my sermon, 1 hour until after you dispose of the Corpus Delicatessen,"
he laughed.
"Will 11 o'clock be all right?"
11 o'clock will be fine." Wolf put down his coffee mug. "I want the men awake when they hear that that damned Jew Moses married a nigger." Wolf and his son left the cabin. Kriegel said to Jack,
"Moses married a nigger? Where do you suppose that man gets crazy ideas like that?"
Jack said, "Damned if I know." In compliance with camp security, Jack had understood, the only telephone at the camp was the one in headquarters' little office. He knew his conversation was not being overheard. Kriegel had followed Wolf out of the cabin to see how blue the hanging corpse was. The phone rang 10 times before Crystal answered it. Jack was used to that. His mother had difficulty moving, even across a health spa's bedroom.
"Hey, Ma. Jack, are you all right?"
"Fine and dandy, except that I am in bad need of a few hours' sleep in the shower. How are you doing?"
"As usual, I've lost a few pounds."
To Crystal, a few pounds was like a bucket of sand to the Sahara.
"But are you all right? Tell me about yourself. Did you connect with your father?"
"Yeah."
"What do you think of him?"
"Senile."
"Senile?" Crystal asked. "Fletch senile?"
"Yeah," Jack answered. "He can't remember any of the stories you tell about him." Chapter 20.
"Mr. Fletcher, we got us a dead man on the place," Emery announced.
"Oh, yes?"
"Yes, sir, dead and bloating up real bad."
Sunday morning, head still hurting, throat sore, neck stiff, Fletch had checked the fax machine in his study and, finding nothing yet on it from Andy Sist, took his cup of coffee out onto the upper balcony. He loved to watch the rising sun dissipate the fog that was in the farm valley most mornings. It had been nearly midnight when he and Carrie had left Camp Orania in Tolliver, Alabama, for home. Before Fletch left the encampment, Jack had placed his hands on the windowsill of the station wagon as if he still had something, one more thing to say to Fletch. Fletch waited, but Jack said nothing. Fletch realized that Jack was still in shock from having killed someone, their having found the cook hanging by his neck from a tree branch. So was Carrie, of course, and she was heading down the long, dark timber road alone in the farm truck. So Fletch said to Jack through the car window, "We've given each other interesting times so far, haven't we?" Jack said, "I've had more boring weekends." "The weekend isn't over yet." Jack looked to his side. "Why are you leaving? It may be over any time now." Coolly, Fletch said, "I have other things to do." Jack did not inquire. Fletch said, "I'm a great one for confirming things."
"Isn't that how you almost just got killed?"
"One source for any story is never enough," Fletch said. "By the way, thanks for riding shotgun for us back in the woods. You had both of us fooled."
"I guess I still can't say, do you trust me?"
"Sure, you can say it," Fletch said. "I'll store the request." Then Fletch said, "Repeat after me."
"Okay.
All bullies are cowards."
"All bullies are cowards.
Paranoid's worst enemies are themselves."
"Paranoid's worst enemies are themselves."
"Bye."
"Bye."
Following Carrie on the long drive home to the farm, Fletch telephoned airlines. Then he telephoned Andy Sist at his home.
"Andy, I'll bet you've heard enough from me today."
"No, sir,"
Andy yawned. It was midnight, and Andy most likely had been in bed asleep.
"It's okay."
"Thing is, I'd like to set up that story regarding people with life-threatening food addictions. Specifically, I'd like to do a short feature at that place called Blythe Spirit in Forward, Wisconsin." "You have a sore throat, Mr. Fletcher?"
Yeah, a bit of a one."
"Sorry. When do you want to do the story?"
"Tomorrow."
"You mean today? Sunday?"
"Is it Sunday yet?"
"As far as I'm concerned, it is. After I go to bed and wake up, it's the next day, however early. I was brought up that way."
"Yes, today, Sunday."
"What's the hurry, Mr. Fletcher? It's a pretty soft feature."
"That it is."
"I've got it, sorry. This is your way of getting to that Fayoni woman."
"Yes."
"And you need to get to her because of some other story you're working on."
"You're thinking pretty well for someone half asleep."
"And let me guess, the other story has something to do with those escapees from the federal prison in Kentucky, am I right?"
I make no promises. I'm not sure what the story is. I'm not even sure there is a story. And if there is a story, at this moment I haven't the slightest idea how I can get a hold of it or how I can report it. I understand. Andy, to be honest, there is also a personal element to what I'm doing. Aha! Just as I guessed, the shapely Faoni is an old flame. Therefore, I expect to pay my own expenses on this one. We wage slaves will appreciate that, Mr. Fletcher. Who's free on camera in Chicago right now? Could Cindy and Mac meet me at O'Hare Airport shortly after noon? I'll check. I'll do the writing, of course, if... Yes, sir, Mr. Fletcher. I'll get research to fax you everything they have about food-addicted people at the farm before dawn. Attaboy. Also everything about Bly's Spirit. Who owns it? Who runs it? Does medical insurance pay for their services, or is it a place one checks into with a credit card? Yes, sir, but Mr. Fletcher...
Yes, Andy?
When I called Bly's Spirit, they were highly protective of their patients or clients or whatever. What makes you think they'll be glad to see you arrive with Cindy Watts and Mac and his camera on a Sunday afternoon?
You'll have to talk with them, of course. That charm of yours. Assure them we absolutely shall respect the privacy of their clients, except any who volunteer to be interviewed on camera, either disguised or not, their choice.
You don't think they might suspect an ulterior motive if I call them at midnight and say a GCN crew is arriving at tea time?
I believe Bly's Spirit is a private for-profit enterprise, Andy. You know they'll be dazzled by the publicity possibilities. For them it means more clients, income, a chance to explain their meditation techniques. And you know the one thing people never can remain silent about is silence. Andy remained silent. Fletch chuckled.
So, call Bly's Spirit early in the morning and tell them we just happen to have a crew in their area. This is their big chance.
Okay.
Sorry to ask for all this at this late hour Saturday night, Andy.
Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
It's okay, Mr. Fletcher. It's always interesting to see how you work. I'll bet you have a very big story here.
Don't bet anything you can't afford to lose, Andy. Don't bet your job on it.
When he arrived home, the Jeep was in the carport as clean as new. Thus, Fletch assumed a certain matter had been taken care of. He assumed the remains of Juan Moreno had been carted off. The garbage bag filled with the filthy prison clothes and boots was undisturbed by the back door. The phones were working. Before he had poured his coffee Sunday morning, Fletch had heard Emery's truck arrive. Normally, Emery did not work on the farm Sundays. Emery stood on the front lawn, squinting in the early morning light, talking to Fletch on the upper balcony.
I didn't know you and Carrie made it home last night, so I came by to feed the horses and the chickens.
Nice of you, Emery. We got home pretty late.
I didn't know you were here until I saw the truck and the station wagon.
We were at a dance in Alabama.
Was it a high old time?
I guess. You should have been with us.
Did you do any buck dancing, Mr. Fletcher?
Not last night.
Many pretty girls?
Pretty girls. Fletch thought of the bare-chested men circling the bonfire, knocking each other silly.
I only had eyes for Carrie, Emery, you know that.
None you'd bring home to Mama, huh?
A few I might bring home to the judge.
That ugly, huh?
Criminal.
Mr. Fletch, I thought maybe we'd lost a cow. Something smelled dead. I followed my nose to the gully. A human. A dead man in the gully. Suspect it might be one of those escaped villains?
Might be. All your relatives accounted for this morning, Emery?
Emery laughed.
I never have been able to count them all. The mess in the gully isn't anybody I recognize anyway.
Well, that's good. On the balcony, Fletch blinked in the sunlight.